Today's episode of the Warner Lounge Podcast is brought to you by the Rado Captain Cook High-Tech Ceramic. Stay tuned to a bit later in the episode to learn more.
Hello and welcome to the Warner Lounge Podcast. My name is Blake Bettner. I'm in studio today, joined with Zach Weiss. Zach Weiss, hello, welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me.
It's been a minute since you've been on.
Yeah, been busy.
Yeah, too busy for the likes of us.
Yeah, certainly.
We're also joined virtually in the computer machine by Zach Kazan. Zach Kazan, hello, welcome.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Awesome. And I'm excited. We have Ed Jelly back on the podcast. Ed, welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
Good. Great to be back as always. I usually say that. It's always great to be here.
It's great to be here. Yeah.
It's just fantastic.
Is it too soon to say they're joining us from like the metaverse, or is that
from the
we're
in the meta.
Spooky.
Yeah.
We need avatars. I'd much rather be 3D than you guys seeing the real thing.
Yeah, we can make better versions of ourselves, right?
Yeah,
like thin and tan and muscly,
full
and,
head of hair.
Yeah,
first thing I'm clicking,
full head of hair.
what meta watch would you be wearing?
Ooh, meta watches. This could be a whole thing. Yeah. So we gotta get a shout out. Somebody left us a comment, wrote us an email. Mm. We dropped a line in one of the last podcasts. What was it? Not enough Bitcoin. And he's like, that should be a new podcast all about watches like over 10 grand. Yeah. Not enough Bitcoin. I like that idea.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll roll that in. Somewhere, sometime, someplace. I could use a digital avatar. That would be nice, right? And some days you just look tired. Some days you're having bad hair days. You know what I realized? We were with, no big deal or anything. We hung out with, what's his name? David Beckham last night. One thing that I learned standing next to like one of the best looking men in the world and having your picture taken does not do you many favors. So,
well, we also I was looking at the photo specifically and other photos from the evening, and like, you know, this is something celebrities, professionals do, is like they know they have a thing they go to, a pose, an angle. I've seen it from other people where they kind of like know how to push their heads, like the lens, like. And like, yeah, he just had this a perfect pose. I'm looking off in the corner in half of the photos, and I might drink up like an idiot.
Well, the lights are above us, and I think you and I kind of like lean our head back, so the lights like kind of filter down like in a very unflat. His head is like always pointed forward.
Yeah, forward.
So I'll chalk it up to we would look very similar if I knew how to hold my face properly.
Yeah. So he also had a pose so that his watch was out, which was very good. You know, for. Given that he was there on Tudor's behalf, you know.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He wasn't there just to hang out with us.
No.
I'm sorry to say.
Nor were we the only people there.
Yeah. But we did chat with him for a while. I will say he was a lovely gentleman.
Yeah, very nice.
Very pleasant. We talked about our kids for a little bit. I kind of gave him shit because, like, I know nothing about soccer. he was great. Thank you to Tudor for inviting us. It was a fun event. What did he have on his wrist?
He had on the boutique edition Black Bay 58 in bronze.
That's right.
The 369 dial.
With the 369 dial. Yeah. We talked about that.
I got a photo
bit.
Of that too.
Yeah. Throw in there. Lots of tattoos.
Very tattooed.
Very tattooed gentleman there. But a nice guy nonetheless. Ed Jelly, what are you wearing on your wrist?
I thought this was a Tudor podcast, so I got the Tudor Black Bay 36 blue.
All right.
So I feel, you know, I got a sweatshirt on here. I'm a little underdressed for GPHG talk.
Okay. We'll get there.
Black Bay 36 blue. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Always good.
Yeah, very cool. Zach Kazan, what are you wearing?
I'm wearing my vintage JLC memo box today. I've been wearing it for the last few days.
Okay. Very cool. Zach Weiss, what do you got on there?
I have on the Synchron Military.
All right, very cool. Not the Doxa, though. Military.
Well, we review forthcoming of this watch, and I was lucky enough to actually be able to get an original Doxa Army, of which there's believed to be like less than 20 or something. So we got that in to photograph with this watch, which was, a unique. It was a watch I didn't even know existed before the Synchron Military came out, and then, you know, to have one of the very small handful in the world was a nice.
It was very cool and lovely.
Yeah, it was cool.
Watch a shout out to our friends at Analog Shift.
Yes.
Thank you for letting us take a look at that.
Only in New York.
In New York. Yep.
Let's make a phone call.
I'm wearing a CNU 50.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in a little while.
It's fantastic. I still love this watch. I still love wearing it. It's a great watch to wear. Very nice. And it's interesting. It's unique. It's a little funky. We published an article today as we record this called Finding Your Lane. And I use this in some in the picture. I think I think about it out. Maybe not. I don't know. It's kind of weird. Maybe we'll talk more about that article later, and you guys can offer your points and or counterpoints or whatever you got. Before we get to that, though, should we talk about so as we record this, last night was the Horological Grand Prix in Geneva, the annual award show that honors some of the new releases over the prior year in a certain defined set of categories. This one was not without a little bit of controversy, I guess. Obviously some very nice watches, took home the severed arm awards. Congratulations.
Strangest trophy. It's so weird.
It's not a trophy. Yes. But congratulations to everyone that won. Our friend Max Booser, former podcast guest, I took home two, I think two of his watches were in there. Piaget, I think, won multiple awards for a pair of very beautiful watches, in my opinion. That Altiplano is lovely, I think. I like that watch. I've got kind of a soft spot for that. Let's see here. In the dive watch category, Ed Jelly, what watch won, took home the prize for the best dive watch last night?
Oh, known for their heritage in dive watches and oceanic exploration, Louis Vuitton took home the prize with the Tambor Street Diver Skyline Blue.
Yes, Street Diver.
Street Diver.
Street Diver.
Seiko 5 vibes for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
what is a street diver? Can we examine this for a minute? Like, what is
this? Feels like
you crank open the sewer and you just hop in.
I feel like, I mean, the irony of it winning the Dive Watch Award is that it's a dive watch that in its own name is acknowledging that it's meant it's an urban fashion watch. Like, you know,
it's a, what are the youths saying? These streets, they're street,
street divers.
and not to, you know, it's easy to crack fun, but you know, to their credit,
but
this is it's unexpected. It's, I don't know, it's a unique take on a dive watch. You know, are we being too harsh here? Zach Kazan, what do you think of this watch?
I mean, I disagree. I think that it's a unique take on a dive watch. Like, there's lots of dive watches with black dials and blue accents. Like, this is not a particularly, novel concept. I guess it has kind of an unusual.
I should say the Tambor design, case. I feel like,
you know what it looks like to me. It mixes an Oris Aquis with the Maurice Lacroix Pontos S Diver that I think they don't make anymore. Oh, but that had the internal bezel with the two.
Wait,
o'clock.
They don't make that anymore?
No, they don't make that.
I like that watch.
Yeah, it was great. Sorry.
What are they?
Okay. They didn't win any GPHG awards, so you know they were like, "Why continue? Why bother?"
Yeah.
It's strange to see. I mean, obviously, like Louis Vuitton popping up in a category like this is odd. Like, it's not what you would expect. I don't think this is a watch that really resonates with like the enthusiast culture in the watch community. But it's a big watch world out there. There's lots of stuff.
Yeah. Here, I thought you would be the one coming to its defense, Zach. I thought you'd be
I can't really defend.
Okay.
I'm curious though what it was up against too. I mean, this is obviously like, what did it beat?
Oh, and it's hard to list up if you want.
Yeah, what was in that? What was in that category?
Yeah. So we have the Doxa Sub 300 Carbon.
That's not a dive watch. Next
certification.
They're not known for their acumen in diving.
Yeah. The Millis Archimedes. The Oris Aquis Date Caliber 400, the Reservoir Hydrosphere Bronze Greg Liqueur Edition, and the Ulysses Nardin Diver X Skeleton.
Okay.
And I believe of the bunch, the Louis Vuitton is the only one with 100 meters of water resistance.
No. Oh, man.
Yes, sir.
That double burns. So, like, wow. Well, that
diver.
Actually does not
it's
even
a, it's
meet
a street,
it's a street diver. Sorry, street urchin, street diver. It doesn't even meet like the ISO standard for a dive watch, which is 200. Wow. That is really rough. That is like
I don't know. Yeah.
I guess clearly they took them all diving to extreme depths, and the Vuitton just outperformed.
So this is not the only Louis Vuitton watch to take home an award last night. I believe there was another
one. The other one makes sense, though.
They won as many awards as MB&F last year.
Yeah. I think the other one had like a skull with a snake coming through its eye or something like this, right?
But the award the Audacity.
Yes, the Audacity. Yeah. Oh, what a category that is. Wow.
That one probably makes a little bit more sense, I think.
Yeah.
That one at least has some, you know, artistic merit. It's not something I would, you know, rock on a regular basis, but like maybe, you know, that is a genuine original kind of concept, I think.
What does that one do?
It's a statement on the irony of the Louis Vuitton dive watch winning the dive watch category. Audacity. None of us are moved on this Louis Vuitton dive watch, I take it then.
No.
Hard pass from all of us. I don't know.
I'm trying to look up. So what is this Audacity? It's the same case though.
It's the same tambour.
It's the same. Yeah. So I actually could have won both. It's the tambour case.
You know what the case?
Carpe diem.
You know what the case looks like to me? You know those like big inflatable pools that you would like put in your backyard. And like once it's filled up with water, and it kind of like bellows out around the edges, like
sturdy edge.
Yeah, that looks like the looks like the profile of the tambour case.
Interesting, I can see that. Yeah,
in my opinion. But,
so this has a snake. So tail I watched that the video to something. It's got all.
Yeah, I watched a video of this baby in action just before recording here.
Yeah,
and this is the first watch that has actually made me laugh out loud. I'm not even kidding. I had a genuine chuckle. The video is like super high production value. There's a live snake. There's like a guy making a watch. The snake is just crawling around. So you slam on the snake pusher at 2 o'clock and this watch
there's
just
a snake
comes
pusher.
To life.
That's the only way to describe it. There's a snake.
Yeah,
pusher.
There's a snake. Yeah. The 2 o'clock snake pusher snake with pusher. The ruby eye.
Yeah.
So you slam on that. The snake's tail wrapped around a diamond points to the minutes. Uh-huh. Snake head, hand painted and lacquered, scoots out of the way to reveal the hour in the middle of the giant gold skull's head.
Okay. So
whoa. And the eye has an animated I don't know what to call it. It opens up. The eye opens up into this red kind of fleur-de-lis-ish pattern. And then the mouth of the skull opens up to reveal the hand-painted carpe diem in the mouth of the skull.
Wow. Ed, you took me on a journey.
Honestly,
it just says carpe diem in the mouth every time.
Seize the day, my friend. Okay. That's what this watch is.
And what's in the two apertures on the side next to Louis Vuitton?
I believe that is I don't know if it's functional or not, but it's an hourglass.
Of course
it appears to me at different points in time on the in different images, but you know, with skulls and snakes, like, you know, you go, and carpe diem, you have to have another deeper meaning on the face of the watch that you know, really locks in the passage of time. You know, life is short. Drop 500 G's on the crazy skull snake watch with the snake pusher.
But it's a little bit like, I'm 14 and this is deep.
Yeah. Or like, I'm Sylvester Stallone and I need another skull watch.
So this is like Sylvester Stallone went up market from the Monte Grappa, whatever the heck that thing was.
When he's not wearing his Richard Mille with the, like, I don't know, gun in it or pills in it.
Do yourself a favor though and check out a video of this thing in action. It's very impressive, but it also reminds me of like when I was little, I had a keychain collection, which makes a lot of sense when you really dive deep into it. Like when you like push the button on like I had like an aquarium keychain that had a very similar effect that I think I got for like $8.99 at Gadgets and Gizmos.
Is there no passive mind-telling on this? You have to press the thing to read the time.
I think the snake's tail is at rest until activated via the snake pusher.
Okay, so you can just enjoy the craft of it until you're ready to read the time. Okay. Excellent.
Yep. That's really, I feel like I just went on a fun journey. That was great.
Yeah, wow. All in good fun. I know that there's some serious watchmaking happening at Louis Vuitton.
It's very impressive. There's a lot going on.
I mean, that's not easy to make. Certainly.
It's just insane. If nothing else, it's very creative. So Not to rag on anybody too hard here. So, what else? A Grand Seiko White Birch also took home an award.
Yeah, which one? That got men. Is it men's prize? Just, is that a typo? Is it men's prize or it's men's?
It's just men's.
Yeah.
Good men's. It won the best men's.
Yeah. Watch for men.
The best, it's man. It, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Ladies. This one is not for you.
Honestly, that's probably a better dive watch than what. But, yeah. But no, it's an awesome watch. So it definitely deserves an award. I feel like that award is a little nondescriptive, unfortunately. But where this watch has a lot going on. But.
Yeah. We like that watch a lot. The judges clearly didn't agree with my take on the lug span being too wide. But congratulations to Grand Seiko on winning that. I believe a Tudor Black Bay, the ceramic Metas watch one, took home an award as well.
That was the Petit de Guy.
Yeah. Say it again?
No. I think I might. Yeah, no.
Yeah, but so
what does it even mean, Petit de Guy?
I think that means it's like in a certain price range or something like that.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Watch for poors.
I think is under.
It's the entry level watch.
Yeah.
It wasn't an aqua.
It was. Yeah.
But that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Can I just throw a random watch in here? That yes. I had no idea. So there's a calendar and astronomy award, which is pretty specific.
Did they make it? How many watches would even qualify for that?
Yeah. Once again, unfortunately, I only
there
had
were
the
six in there.
There were
six. I have the list of entrants. If you'd like to hear them,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we got the in calendar and astronomy. We got the Arnold and Son Luna Magna, the Breitling Premier B25 Datura 42, Bulgari Octo Finissimo. I believe that's a perpetual calendar. And
which
then
won
we have
something
the Christian
else. That won the whole thing.
Okay.
Vanderclau.
Oh yeah, Vanderclau.
CVDK. Planetarium Isinga, the IWC Big Pilot Calendar Top Gun Mojave, and then personal favorite, the Constantine Shaken Minotaur, also in there.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually, that's a pretty fun selection watch.
Yeah.
But I was just, I really like Christian Vanderclau. I feel like he's a watchmaker, and it's a brand we don't hear of very often. Their specialty are like kind of planetarium watches, which I was randomly thinking about this morning, actually not even having looked at what won, because there's very few watches that show something that like you will not even see a complete cycle of in your lifetime.
Yeah.
And except for the planetarium watches with the like
there
outer
are a few
planets.
Watches like that. Yeah. We should do a whole article on the watches that you will not be able to take proper use of, use of in your lifetime.
Watches that are beyond because you live in the moment with your watch usually, but these are watches that are much grander.
Carpe diem.
Carpe diem.
Sorry. You should do a Why I Love It on that.
I think I will. Watch. That's a I don't know. Or like at least the concept. This version is funky. It's got some blue kind of panels on it.
It's cool.
But I like the planetarium stuff. I think that's very interesting. Yeah.
This is actually also the world's smallest mechanical planetarium.
Wow.
That's really neat.
Yeah.
It's very neat.
Yeah. That's very cool.
Yeah.
And then you alluded to it there, the Bulgari Perpetual Calendar Octo Finissimo that won the Best in Show,
Aguido.
The Best Picture, the Aguidor. Apologies in advance for our pronunciation of all of these things. But so that's like the main prize.
One of these days, somebody who works for a company will speak French.
Yeah.
But no day soon.
Yeah, no day soon. Yeah.
What was this one up against, Ed? Do you have the...
Yeah, Ed, what was... Or is that just one that's selected from all
I think
all
that's just overall...
Entrants?
Yeah, there's no. Okay, gotcha. There doesn't appear to be a category for the, just that. I think it was just everybody.
Yeah.
Do they go into great detail at the award show of like why they made these selections, or is it more of like the Academy's like you won, somebody from Bulgari comes up, thank you, mm-hmm. Next.
I think it's more of that than Whereas, maybe like at the Oscars, you got the person that comes up and presents and maybe talks about the movie or the categories or whatever made something so great. And then the actor or the director or whoever comes up and talks about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess they don't really do that. They just like thank their mom and Jesus and go off stage, right?
Are you saying you need someone to explain why that Louis Vuitton dive watch is great?
No. Well, I mean, yes, but at the same time, I'm kind of curious, just, generally speaking, and not that, I feel like the Octo Finissimo Perpetual Calendar has, there's a lot of reasons why that would have won,
Yeah.
Once again, up against everything else in there that's, there's a matter of taste and some other greater decisions that are going on. Like what means greatest in this context?
But like subjective humans are making these decisions and people far fancier than us get in a room and, you know.
And pick which Louis Vuitton is the best dive watch.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to live down.
Far be it from us to question their collective wisdom of the jury there.
So the Perpetual Calendar, I mean, this is a gorgeous watch. This came out, I mean, a few months ago. I remember, I feel like, Zach, you were particularly taken out of it when it did.
Yeah.
I had my first Octo Finissimo Experientissimo at Windup, of all places, when Adam Craniotis had the revolution.
Our friend Adam Craniotis had his... the chronograph that was like a special edition for Revolution.
Yeah, it was the full loom dial chronograph.
That was cool.
Dual time chronograph. It has a really cool push button 24 hour hand on it.
Yeah.
And I'd actually never tried one of these on before. And, you know, there's the whole like, there's a lot of fuss about these watches. And it's a bizarre watch. It really does not feel like anything else. Like, it's very wide. It's a big watch.
Yeah.
But it's,
and it's like paper
ultra
flat.
Yeah, so thin. Yeah. And I mean, that's obviously part of why this one, I'm sure, it's this ultra thin perpetual calendar with retrograde on it. But yeah, I don't know. They're very neat. They're very neat. I don't know if I'm quite in that like obsessed, like I feel like people are really diehards for the Octo Finissimo right now. I don't think I'm quite there, but I definitely get it more now than I did before.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean? Yeah, it's neat. I feel like you have to have the right wrist for it, just because there's not much shape in the case.
No,
like
it's
flat as canvas, so it's gonna sit how it's gonna sit, right? So Zach, you had a chance to see this watch too. What was your impression of it?
So I didn't really get to spend a lot of time with Adams at Windup, but I've encountered an Octo Finissimo at a meetup once, and it was very impressive. Like I'm kind of a sucker for the design. I love the aesthetic of it. I'm a fan of those watches in general. I think that they're kind of like a really interesting, take on like the, classic integrated bracelet look and like a really hyper modern, kind of context. Mm-hmm. They're great.
Ed Jelly, do you have a take on the Octo Finissimo?
Yeah, I'm actually a big fan myself. I have not experienced them in person, but, there's just a lot to like about them. But again, it's one of those things where I worry that if, like don't meet your heroes kind of thing, like if I were to try it on, I'm not so sure just based on what I have in my collection that it would work. And based on how I kind of dress on a day-to-day basis that my wardrobe would not, I don't know, man. I feel like you gotta be wearing a real crisp suit to kind of rock these. I don't know,
I don't know either. I'll say particularly with the one Adam had, and Adam certainly wasn't wearing a suit.
He had sandals on, of course, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But that one in particular, because they gave it this like this tachometer and like...
Oh, engraved into the bezel.
And it like... I mean, it has like almost like a funky 90s sport watch look to it. Like it's not nearly as... It didn't come off formal. But I feel like a certain street diver, like this is definitely a watch that you could wear with like... A more casual but considered clothing.
That's why I'd like to try one on, like to kind of get a better feel for it. But every time I see a picture of it, I'm like, and then you read the specs and then you look at the movement through the back and everything is just like, so thin and sleek and great. Mm-hmm. And, I definitely like to pop in and check one of these out sometime.
I like the Toto Endo versions of these. I think are really cool. Yeah. That blue one with the yellow... I won't say what it reminded me of at first. Moon? It's not a moon. I thought it was like a moon phase. Then I thought it like rotated into.
Yeah, I thought it was.
It looks like a banana.
It looks like a banana. Yeah. I didn't want to shatter anybody else's. Because when I brought that up to you, Zach, you're like, I didn't see that, but now it's all I see.
But then you can go one step further and just be like, it's like the album cover of the Velvet Underground, which is awesome.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Did you see the other Octo Finissimo at Windup?
I did not. I only saw that one.
I'm gonna forget his exact. It's either Rich or Rick from Solabs had a he has like a I guess it's probably a 90s Gerald Genta.
I saw that, the Bulgari Gerald Genta. Yeah, that was a very cool watch.
It's the same like case in a sense, but it's much thicker. It's like not as thin watch, and it was actually very cool. I feel like in the kind of the opposite, it's like a chunky watch with a rubber bracelet that was integrated and it was big for my wrist, but like it fit his wrist very well. And I was like, this has this is neat. Like, it had a way more of a kind of a cool factor than I expected.
Yeah. And it's not, people would be like, what's that?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's not like, oh, that's that hot new Bulgari Octopanissimo. It's more like a, what's going on with this thing? It's a story waiting to happen.
Right, and this one says Genta on the title, which is
says Genta. Neat. That guy.
That guy.
The guy who designed that thing. Yeah. Ed Jelly, you missed out on a Hot Takes episode that we did a while back.
I heard.
Did you listen to that episode?
I might have. That might have been one of those while driving ones. So
sure.
Please don't.
Did you
don't hit me too hard?
What do you think of minute 23?
Minute 23 was pretty good overall. No, I don't know.
Zach kind of let the cat out of the bag on the NATO straps there, and I thought you might have something to say on that, or even contribute a hot take or two of your own.
I'm unprepared, but you know, I don't know. This has really put me on the spot here.
I'll give a minute to think. I was thinking. I realized because I at the end I was like, I don't know what my hot take is either. I think I came up with something pretty lame.
Yeah,
but I'm going to do a non-watch hot take.
Okay, lay it on us.
Okay, Squid Game is overrated. Whoa. In fact, it's terrible.
Wow.
It's terrible.
All right.
Done.
You know what? Not so hot. I think I might be on Team Zach.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that either.
What a ice warm breaker. Take, Zach.
Jeez, sorry.
No, I'm only maybe 4 or 5 episodes in. It really slowed down.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to watch. It's
like boring. The initial concept goes kind of, oh, okay, that, yeah. You know. But then, you know, I went back and sat down and watched another few episodes. And I was like, oh, like, okay.
Yeah. All right. Just kill them already. I'm over it.
But now you just watch to see what kind of thing they're going to put them through.
Yeah, kind of.
Right? Anyways. It was more like, you know, do you agree with Zach on his NATO hot take? Or is he...
Does Zach doesn't like NATO straps?
He's not on the NATO strap thing.
Oh, dude, I'm all in on NATOs. All in.
He's all in on NATOs. Okay.
I think we knew that about Ed Jelly.
I'm a NATO guy.
That's self-evident.
This episode is brought to you by Rado and the Captain Cook High-Tech Ceramic Watch. Known as the master of materials, Rado has revolutionized traditional watchmaking with forward-thinking and innovative designs. The brand is once again shaking things up by introducing high-tech ceramic monoblock case construction to their iconic Captain Cook lineup. Powered by the Rado Caliber R734, the Captain Cook High-Tech Ceramic boasts an 80-hour power reserve and up to 300 meters water resistance. The dial and case back are stunningly crafted in black tinted sapphire crystal, allowing its wearer to explore and admire the inner workings of the skeletonized movement in a subtle manner without sacrificing legibility. The perfect balance of innovation, function, durability, and comfort, the Captain Cook High-Tech Ceramic is now available in 4 versions. For more information, visit www.rado.com.
Right. One look at the gram and you'll see there's a lot of straps going on. I've been on a bracelet kick lately, but you're wrong, Zach. Sorry.
Sorry, Zach.
I respect you.
The last couple weeks. That's fine.
Ed, you've had you recently bought something pretty cool. What was your last incoming?
The Grand Seiko SBG N003.
Of course.
That could be a hot take. Quartz is great. Quartz is fantastic. Love quartz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is honestly a hot take, I think.
You know what? Here's a hot take. Quartz is easier than mechanical. It has been borderline liberating to wake up in the morning, pop on the Grand Seiko, have it accurate to the second from back in, 2 months ago when I set it, and not have to deal with the BS of like, oh, let me wind it. Let me set it. Let me make sure the time is right. It's close enough. No, that's my there's my hot take. Quartz is sick.
Are you even a watch enthusiast, Ed? The whole point, you get up in the morning, you get to wind your watch and set it and do all the stuff. That's what gives us joy, right? No.
Yep. I mean, that's the romantic take, but no, man, you pop on a hyper accurate quartz and your day is just ready to go.
Yeah, no, I feel that. I can appreciate that too. And that's it's a great looking watch. This is the GMT.
Yep.
What color scheme did you get?
I got the black dial. It's got the orangey red GMT.
Orange red. Papaya.
It's not super orange. Yeah, it's like a papaya. Okay.
I think that's what we landed
papaya
on.
Papaya or guava. I can't.
Yeah.
Have you put it on any other straps?
Yeah, NATO straps.
All NATO.
Great
all
choice.
The time.
Fantastic.
No, I've been kind of split 50-50. It probably spends more time on the bracelet because it's very comfy.
Yeah.
the lugs curve down like nicely to the wrist, so the bracelet kind of just blends in real nice. Yeah. But no, it's also got 19 millimeter lugs, so my 19 millimeter lug width collection is not as extensive as my 20, even though I have three watches with 19 millimeter lugs. I used to publicly hate 19 millimeter lugs, and then I got a Black Bay 36, the Grand Seiko, and the Doxa Sub 200, all 19
millimeter. 19 millimeter lug span is the correct lug span for a 36 millimeter case. I don't know if you know that. That's just
hot take.
That's just objective.
Hot take. The truth. Watch out.
It is the very. I did the math.
Yeah, using the Fibonacci sequence.
I did the ratio on the.
It checks out.
It's there.
It checks out. Right.
So. What is Grand's with Grand Seiko though in like odd lug?
Yeah, well, it's funny. I now have two Grand Seikos. I'm not wearing
brag.
Yeah, I'm not wearing the new one that I have because.
Oh, that's right. You just the incoming the other day.
Yeah, I know. So tomorrow, as of recording this on the 6th, is a Grand Seiko GS9 Club event. So I'll wear it to that. Yeah. But I'm going to a concert tonight, so I do not want to wear it to that because that one is. So
it's not mosh pit ready.
It's not mosh pit.
Is there an ISO standard for mosh pit?
Yeah, ready. It is higher than the Louis Vuitton, unfortunately. that is what I forgot. What the old butt of the jokes was the watch, but it's gonna. It is now the Louis Vuitton until something replaces it. Mm-hmm. That is the standard everything has to live up to. Yeah. But anyway, that watch is it's the SPG W277. So that's the green dial. But that's in the 37 millimeter case. That is a 19 millimeter lug. The other Grand Seiko I have is the SBGA 375. That is a 40 millimeter case with a 19 millimeter lug also. So they use it. And you know what? It kind of works on both. It works on both. I mean, they're very different style cases, but like that is, you know, those are pretty different size. I mean, the 40 millimeter, at least you'd expect to have a 20 millimeter. But it has it's the 44 GS case. So it has a really wide kind of.
It works with
lugs, or case sides, you know.
I would give it that. And then white birch. Let's go to 22.
Yeah, jump it up, kick it up.
20? No. 21. All the way up 22.
Yeah.
So I have a question about 19 millimeter lug widths that has kind of like plagued me for a long time. I'm interested to get your take. Would you rather squeeze a 20 millimeter strap onto a 19 millimeter lug width watch? Or put an 18 millimeter strap on that watch and have the visible spring bars on either side.
I'm a hard no on visible spring bars.
So you're making a 20 fit.
I'd make a 20 fit over put an 18 in.
And we'll pause here to say that 19 millimeter straps exist.
Yes,
you can. Yeah. They can be had in the.
I'll plug it at the wind of white. Yeah, we in our Italian made straps we have those in 19.
Yeah, and the more you have, Ed, you got a few now. Now you have more reasons to start like investing in nice 19 millimeter straps.
Yeah,
I've got a few as well. So, I like to have a few in there. So I've got 19 millimeter NATOs and that Zenith A384 is a 19 millimeter lug span, and that has kind of a flared like lug thing too going on with it. And so,
The 19. I mean, it's made a strong return. Like 21s, not so much. Mm. But 19s are they're very common now.
Ed, you squeezing a 20 on, or are you going for the 18?
No, unless you're James Bond, you're not undersizing the NATO. I think that was like the only time in history that they were able to get away with that without any severe consequences.
It's before the internet is why.
Yeah, exactly. You got to cram the 20 in there
with like a full on white tuxedo.
Yeah.
Too.
Yes.
just over the. Yeah. Well, I'll take that route then. I'll go the as I fancy myself a little James Bondish, of course.
The only thing I'll say with that's if you cram a 20 into a 19, then putting that back into a 20 doesn't work so well afterwards because the strap gets a little bit messed up.
And then you kind of have to make a choice when you do that because the strap is never the same after you've like jammed it into that more narrow lug width. But yeah, I'm the same. I'll squeeze it in.
Yeah.
Ed, when you bought your Grand Seiko, was it filling a certain hole in your collection? Were you like, I need a watch that's like this, and that looks like this, and I don't have one, I'm putting it in there, or did you just like the watch and you bought it?
Probably a little bit of both. I mean, I did not have a GMT before. I really don't need a GMT, but it's just kind of cool. It's one of those things that, like, I don't even want to say collector, as a watch enthusiast, because I don't really have, like, this extensive collection, you know, it feels like you got to have a GMT at some point in your life. Like I reviewed several, and I just kind of like the watch too. I touched on it a couple episodes back, but like it's kind of got that Explorer 2 vibe with the set steel bezel, you know, orangey papaya red GMT hand, but it's just different enough. It's got that like Grand Seiko look and feel, and it's just different on the wrist. So I wanted something kind of in the vein of an Explorer, but kind of more, I guess, unique in its own way. So this kind of filled that. And my kind of rule is once you like follow the hashtag on Instagram for a watch, like you're probably going to end up buying it.
That's it.
When in a return.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I like advertised it to myself.
So you like willfully, you wanted to kind of influence yourself into buying.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the more you see of it, like with anything, like you just kind of get obsessed with it. And then, you know, you hit the watch recon alert and then like it's over. You just put the money aside.
I agree with that. I never really thought about that that funnel, that self-created funnel. But I've definitely followed hashtags for watches that I then bought.
So that's interesting. I did this article. I think it was called Cutting Through the Noise and Finding Your Lane with Watches. And kind of confront that, like, we are inundated with a lot of different, like, influences and, like, hype things and, you know, frankly, new things that are cool and sexy and shiny and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, being able to kind of cut through some of that and say, you know, well, I like that and I don't like that. Or, you know, you have your own reasons for liking it or for wanting to purchase it or for eventually purchasing it, indeed, that go beyond the... Like, this is a really popular watch on Instagram right now. Ed, you kind of like reverse engineered that whole situation, though.
Yeah. You can make whatever you want popular on, you know, the algorithm listens. I mean, if you if you kind of seek something out and put it in front of your face enough, I think really the only reason I do that is like kind of to see how a watch works on different wrists, on different straps, presented differently. And like, for me, it's one of the most helpful ways to kind of narrow down a purchase decision because you do get to see this watch out in the wild. Like when you're reading a review or you're watching a review, you know, there's that inherent bias of the person who's writing it. I mean, we've all written watch reviews. You know that you're the one reviewing the watch and the person that's reading it has to accept your opinion as valid to kind of side with you on the review. Otherwise, you know, you have no credibility and it's shot. You have to kind of keep in mind when you're reading these reviews that there's a person writing them. But when you're just looking at kind of pictures out in the wild and seeing how this fits on different straps, different scenarios, different wrists, you get like a more complete picture of what watch you may be considering. And I've found with everything that I bought, it kind of really helps narrow it down.
Do you, when you open up your watch box or sock drawer or whatever, wherever it is that you keep your watches, do you feel like, there's a theme emerging here? Or like, do you consider yourself like, this is the lane that I kind of stay in and this is the vibe that I like to go for?
Not really. I mean, I don't have like a whole sock drawer full of black dialed sports watches. I think for me, kind of, I don't really have any set rules. Like if something speaks to me for one reason or another, I'm not going to be like, oh, well, I already have a GMT or like, I already have a dive watch. I got to get rid of this other one. I don't have very strict rules about my collection. It's mostly if something speaks to me, whether it be design or functionality, that kind of is the driving force and what helps me make a decision, whether it be a purchase decision or what I'm going to wear for that day. I don't know.
When you were just getting into it, like just kind of getting into watches in general, did you have like that's like, I love that. And that's kind of what, like a certain watch that kind of pulled you into it and that kind of like defined how you kind of started your collecting journey?
Yeah, actually, my first mechanical watch was a Seiko SKX 173. I bought it about 10 years ago. I was in college and I was like, oh, I need to get a watch because I had a couple professors that were very strict about not checking your phone. And, you know, everybody in school wants to know how long they have to sit here before they're set free. And I thought it was a good time to get a watch. So I think I dabbled with like a couple of like Timex expeditions from way back. And, you know, you kind of hit that internet rabbit hole, a couple forum posts and something about a dive watch, just like it was super tough. they look cool. They were quite popular at the time. Like 10 years ago was like, you know, the Seiko, you either getting a Monster or an SKX. Mm-hmm. I think that was like the rule for getting into watches about 10, 11 years ago. And, you know, I still have that watch. I still wear it regularly. And I think just getting something mechanical, kind of just vaults you into a whole different world of stuff. I don't have all dive watches. So I don't know. I feel like staying in my zone or in my lane or building a collection, like it's always kind of influenced by what speaks to me. I try not to set any rules because like, you know, I don't have any really dress watches. Like I have an Orient Bambino, that I bought way back that I never wear anymore. That's probably the most out of my lane watch. And, I don't know. It was an impulse buy. I didn't really, you know, look into it super crazy. And, you know, I don't really wear it. It just kind of sits there. It's not really, I wore it at my wedding. So it's like, I'm not going to sell it for what, like $75.
And you went, and you just went to a wedding, as I recall. What watch did you wear to that wedding?
I wore the, Grand Seiko.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The GMT. I also have two Grand Seikos, both quartz.
I know. Zach Kazan, how many Grand Seikos do you have?
Currently just one, but it's part of a series.
You got to get those numbers up.
I mean, I've owned several over the years, but this the SPGH 271 is the one that's stayed. But yeah. I mean, like Ed, there are Grand Seikos in my. You know, like hashtags that I follow, and so like they pop up in my feed frequently. So I'm always on the hunt for something.
Famously, got out of tool watches. Is there something on the horizon?
Yeah, famously in a very small, very small circle.
The world knows this. Is there something?
David Beckham brought it up to us last night, actually.
Yeah,
well, he and I got out of tool watches. Yeah. What's up with that?
Yeah, the president. I'm on a Zoom call with him right after this.
Yeah. So. Tudor US was like, "I heard you guys are selling off your
name."
Yeah. I mean, did you have something on the horizon that you're following?
I mean, there's always like I always have a handful of ideas. I really do want a spring drive at some point. So I'm thinking like I'm getting, you know, potentially closer to picking up a spring drive. I'm not really sure which reference I'd ultimately go with, but the next Grand Seiko that I pick up, and there will be another Grand Seiko at some point. I definitely want to tap into spring drive because I've had quartz Grand Seikos. I currently own a high beat. I've had other high beats too. I've had a couple of Grand Seiko GMTs. Spring drive is kind of the area that I haven't explored yet. So that's probably next for me.
Cool. If somebody opened your watch box or looked at your collection, would they see like, oh, there's a cohesion here, or you could tell a single person put this together, or is it just kind of all over the map?
They would think an insane person put this together. I don't know. I think I was kind of thinking about that as Ed was answering the question, and I think like over time, like my lane has kind of like shifted. Like I've definitely gone through like phases, and I think like right now, if you looked at my watch box, you'd see someone who's like. And compared it to like, you know, my watch box a couple of years ago, you'd see someone who's kind of like, you know, as I wrote about, kind of like phasing out of those like sports watches and tool watches and kind of enjoying more, you know, kind of like simple, casual, maybe slightly dressier, watches that aren't as sporty, in their aesthetic or in how they're made. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of what my watch box looks like now, but, ultimately, like I try to just be open-minded and focus on stuff that interests me for whatever reason. And there's so many different things that, that can like pull you in to any particular watch.
Is the Speedmaster at risk?
Oh yeah, I mean, nothing is so sacred, is sacred. That, okay. that it can't be it can't
it's
be discarded.
Squid game of a watch collection.
Yeah,
it really is.
Ed Jelly, is the Speedmaster a tool watch?
Is what?
Is the Speedmaster a tool watch?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to go yeah.
You're going to go yeah? Okay. Yeah. We all own Speedmasters here, sitting here. I ever ask you that? Is the Speedmaster a tool watch?
Yeah. I definitely think I would, like, my knee-jerk reaction would be to say yes, but I guess you could think about it more and you know, I get the one I have also, the 3520, which is, you know, the reduced triple calendar I wrote about, like, yeah. That one is also too, like, I think Zach's point, like, that was a lot less legible than most chronographs because it has a hell of a lot more going on to it. And it's really like, it's almost more of a calendar watch than a chronograph, particularly in like how I wear it or I feel about it, you know?
Yeah.
Which a calendar is not a very toolish sort of complication. I don't know if that makes sense, but, but the watch itself, like, it is a, like, my black dial chronograph, you know, and it fits that kind of niche. And I like that.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. I think I would have said, yeah, of course, to watch it because of like the hair, like everything that's kind of like goes along with it.
Yeah.
But Zach Kazan, I think you made like a fairly compelling case that, you know, I don't even know what to say about it now, what to call it now. And I guess you kind of have to feel comfortable with like, I don't have to fit that into like a neat little box.
Especially now that like the you know, the newest versions of it, like they're very luxurious now. But you know, I was, you know, to the point, it's like you just wear it for how you wear it.
Yeah.
You
know? Zach Weiss, what about you? What about has your collection kind of like veered into a certain direction, or is it still kind of all over the map? Or
I mean, it's pretty all over the map. I mean, my collection, I think there's two parts to it. One is the worn and wound part of it. So like my collection has a lot of worn and wound limited editions because I do get one of every one, and those are pretty all over the place. Although. Mm-hmm.
But that's all something about
by me, my hand. So I think they'll have like a kind of some aesthetic cohesion. There's a lot of crosshair dials, dates is at 6 to that one guy who probably hates all of our limited editions.
he's tuned out. We've lost him.
Yeah, he's gone. but then in terms of like the watches I've purchased, I think there's been kind of eras to it. I used to be much more tool watch and chronograph focused. I mean, there was a point in which I had multiple Lemania 5100 chronographs and whatever. And then I got rid of them all. Now I haven't.
And then you just bought one.
I just got out. It's been a really bad couple months. But like getting that back, and that watch really feels like me. I have to say, like
that watch is stunning.
Clicks,
By the way,
I'll wear it some other time soon. Once again, not wearing it because. So it's an Orofino with olive green PVD coating on it, which is like if you look at it too hard, it comes off. So I'm definitely not wearing that to a venue or anything. Like
mosh pitting.
Yes, no moshings. Moshing. I don't think there'll be moshing tonight. But I've literally got like beer, like just, you know, beer just explodes at concerts and it just rains down. You're like, you don't want to clean that out of your chronograph, you know? Ed can attest. But it's weird though. I mean, I have there's a couple of dressier pieces. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd like to think it's well-rounded though. I definitely do think about things competing with each other. Yeah, and so like if I, because you know it happens where you like have a watch you love, and then a year or two later you get something else that's new and shiny, and maybe it is like literally a three-hand dive watch with a bezel that's 39 to 41 millimeters, something like that.
Yeah,
which there's a lot of watches out there, a lot of temptation in that price in that category to get, but like I have my SBB 149. I love that watch. Yeah. If something were to push it off of its pedestal, I think I would feel bad. Because I love that watch a lot. And I don't want to someday find that on the chopping block because something else has become.
But what if something did? And you're like, I love that just as much. And it's like maybe a little different. Like would you get rid of the 149? You'd be like, well, I guess I have to get rid of this.
No, I mean it's not like
it's okay to like both.
It's okay to like both and it's okay to have both. But like, occasionally I'm like, just one watch doesn't quite cut it. I mean, like I had two Speedmasters for a while, and honestly, like they were very different Speedmasters, but it was kind of like they weren't radically different. And it was a little bit like, I felt at a certain point, it's like, I want to choose between these two watches because the broad arrow that I had was taking away from wearing the reduced calendar, which I think is more me of a watch, you know?
Yeah. I think like Ed said, I kind of buy watches that appeal to me and I know enough about my own like sense of style and taste with watches at this point that I kind of can decipher like what works for me from the fanfare of it all. And I think that's probably the same goes for all of us. You know, you've been around, like, I think we still can succumb to it a little bit, even though I have watches in my collection that are considered like overhyped watches. And, you know, I'd be the first to admit that, but you know, I can articulate why I like them and why they're in my collection. And I don't really give a shit about them being that way. And if they kind of weren't popular tomorrow, it wouldn't really bother me in the slightest. And I think, you know, it's, you have to confront that, like, you know, in your own thing. And
Yeah.
And being able to say, like, you know, when I open my watch box, it might look like a little all over the place, but I don't know. Like, I there's certainly like a type there that I think you could say, right? Like, it's probably for all, like, we have a type, you know, when you look at the watches that are in our watch boxes. But even if they do go into kind of like random, seemingly random territory sometime, like, that's okay.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's the and the oddball.
In the oddball, yeah.
Like, it is nice to have an oddball watch. It's nice to have something that, like, doesn't fit into a category well and has, you know, and for me, that's that Louis Erard I have. It's a strange watch. It's got funky colors on it. It's got strange shapes on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the experience of wearing that's very different from other watches in a way I did not know I was looking for and I enjoy, you know.
But however many years ago, I don't think any of us sat down and, like, wrote down a list of, like, all right, I'm going to build a watch collection. It's got to, like, have this, 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 and this. And but some people do take that approach and are very kind of, like, meticulous and, you know, I'm going to collect, like, this kind of a thing. You know, chronographs from the early 70s, you know, or just chronographs in general or, you know, whatever it is. Which, you know, I admire. Then there's a lot of dedication that goes into that. And we're probably a lot more haphazard in how we operate. In adding things to our collection. But how do you collect? What is your lane? Do you have a lane? Does that even matter? Do we need to have a lane? You know, we probably don't need to force ourselves into these things.
And I like the idea, too, of how does your lane relate to that first watch? And is there...
Yeah, so in my article, you know, I kind of contend that, like, the watch that really pulled me in to it was kind of like set that center point, whether I liked it or not, of my collecting. And it doesn't get any more like kind of plain Jane center point than a Submariner.
That's good. I mean, in that sense, you can go anywhere.
Like, so I kind of have watches, I think, that branch off in either direction from there. But that has been kind of like a North Star for me. So I don't know. Jack, do you have a watch that was a singular watch that you remember? Like, oh, this is the watch that, like, got me into it. And that has kind of served as a template.
Well, like, similar to Ed, like, I kind of cut my teeth on, like, inexpensive Seikos. And, like, for me, it was really the Monster. You know, like, that was one of, it wasn't my first mechanical watch, but it was, the Seiko Monster was, like, among the first mechanical watches that, like, I really loved, that, like, I connected with. And I've had several, you know, over the years. And so, like, but that's, like, that's an oddball watch, like, for sure. Like, that's a, you know, at the time was considered, like, a, you know, pretty avant-garde, you know, like, case shape. And, like, I still am drawn to that, you know, like, I'm wearing a watch right now that has an unusual case shape. I have other watches in my collection, you know, that are similarly kind of strange. So maybe for me, it's just like the notion of, like, you know, those, like, oddball watches kind of are what is appealing to me. Cause I do find myself going back to those things and drawn to, like, the weirder stuff, you know, over and over again.
Yeah. Zach Weiss, what about you? Do you remember that watch for you?
It's a little challenge. So I grew up wearing watches. I've always worn watches. And, you know, there were, like, there was a while when I was, I don't know, probably middle school or something. Whenever the first Swatch skins came out, I wore those. Yeah. Like, that. I'd break it, like, every year. It would end up being dead.
Yeah.
I need to get another one. But, like more formative years. So my senior year in college, my parents gave it to me as like a graduation gift. It was this is a weird watch. It was the Nuka Zoo. So this was like a all metal digital watch that told time through like dots and lines.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And designed by a New York based designer named Matthew Waldman. And that just, like, nothing else before spoke to me.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I don't know how that quite relates to my current stuff, but I went from there to then a couple of, like, Nixons I would wear that were, one was 100% blue and one was 100% red.
Yeah.
And so I feel like part of me actually is quite drawn to
you
a certain,
you do have this,
like,
monochromatic, like, thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I definitely like monochromatic stuff. And
so maybe that was a part of kind of, like, what cast that die, like, back then. Like,
yeah. But certainly wasn't a traditional watch from a big, like, watch brand. Like, it wasn't any of the classic things. And, you know, I kind of, like, really in the beginning of Worn and Wound is when I got into all these kind of more the cult things that kind of are part of the enthusiasm. So, like, that's when I got into Seikos, is kind of like going back and looking into everything as we were kind of doing Worn and Wound in the early days, you know?
That's a cool story. I didn't know that. Well, so what was that experience for you? Let us know. And be sure to check out the article, leave your comment there, and then we'll get a video spun up responding to your feedback, to your comments, to your questions, whatever it is. So send them our way, however it is you want to do that. Ed Jelly, thank you for joining us today on the podcast. It's a pleasure having you.
Yeah, always always a pleasure.
All right, Zach, till next time.
Till next time.
You listener, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.